You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Ladies with Power. It's been something of a theme this week with the publication of an interesting new book on the Obama White House. The Obamas, by New York Times reporter Jody Cantor, profiles a woman at the center of power in the form of First Lady Michelle Obama. But it's hardly the first time we've seen a woman wielding political power in modern times.
Stand down, Margaret, stand down, please. Stand down, Margaret. I say stand down, Margaret, stand down, please. Stand down, down.
No, you don't have to go back to Catherine the Great to find a woman taking armies into battle, humbling her political foes, and intimidating rival nations on the world stage. Stand Down Margaret is the name of that tune, but the Beat didn't even need to use her last name. Well before she left office, British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was a cultural symbol of tough, uncompromising conservatism.
Where there is discord, may we bring harmony. Where there is error, may we bring truth. Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
That's Margaret Thatcher speaking at the start of her term as British Prime Minister back in 1979. She, along with Ronald Reagan, defined the conservative movement at the end of the 20th century. Thatcher, even a more striking figure, perhaps, than Reagan. Mrs. Thatcher has been evoked continually in the GOP presidential campaign, admired by Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich, who can hardly match her toughness. And there are no big Hollywood films about Santorum, Newt, or Reagan. But the Iron Lady has her own biopic, The Iron Lady, starring Meryl Streep. The movie is based on a book by John Campbell, who was good enough to come into the studio this week to talk to us and remind us just what it was that set Mrs. Thatcher apart from the other politicians of her day.
Well, she was very different from anybody else, partly simply because she was a woman. I mean, that made her distinctive, and she played up to that difference very skillfully, and that she was very good at striking a clear note in a different tone of voice from any other political figure we had had before. She knew what she thought was right and what she thought was wrong. She was a divisive figure and intended to be.
What was the tension between the sense of her as a woman and the sense of her as a direct? I mean, she seems hyper-masculine in some sense, beyond even masculine in the sense of her directness and her ability to intimidate and be powerful, yet she was also tender. She had her very, very human side.
She played those two roles very skillfully indeed, which is her colleagues and opponents never quite knew which side of her they were dealing with, because she could be very feminine and flirtatious, or she could hit them over the head with her famous handbag, and they didn't know which to expect. She could switch from one to the other very quickly.
You know, one of the things I'm reminded of is when I was a journalist back in Washington years and years ago, I remember when the Falklands War broke out. And at that time, I remember looking at the map and going, oh, right, this old thing. Yeah, what's that about? Oh, what are we getting into? And yet when she confronted the issue, there was no, what are we getting into? This is simple.
I must tell the House that the Falkland Islands and their dependencies remain British territory. No aggression and no invasion can alter that simple fact. It is a government's objective to see that the islands are freed from occupation and are returned to British administration.
It seemed like a huge mess to me, and to her it seemed like, no, this is simple.
She was very good at making complicated things simple. She did that with economics as well. People talked about monetarism and complicated economic theories. She talked about housewife economics and thrift and things. She made complicated things sound simple and common sense. She had a black and white way of looking at things, which was politically very effective.
What are Reagan and Thatcher? Are they two pillars of the same building, or are they just very, very different characters who happened to come along at the same time and were very conservative?
I think they're certainly very, very different characters, different styles of politician totally. Reagan was very much a broad brush, mood music politician. Mrs. Thatcher was a detail woman. She did her homework. She knew her stuff. She wanted the answers. She wanted everything to be clear cut. And that was where, well, that's why they made such a good complementary pair. I mean, and at G7 summits and things, Reagan was happy to sit back and let her do the detail.
Was she happy to do that?
Oh, very much so. She was very lucky in her president, because he was relaxed enough to let her play a bigger role, really, in the end of the Cold War and things, dealing with Gorbachev. You know, she was prime minister of a relatively small, relatively unimportant country. She would have loved to have been the leader of the free world herself. Right. She knew she had to be Reagan's sidekick. But Reagan was confident enough to let her do that, because she could articulate things so clearly and so effectively. She became a great, you know, it's a heroine, you know, behind the Iron Curtain into Poland and Czechoslovakia and things. I mean, she played that very skillfully. She was a great sort of cheerleader.
What do you think the challenges are in this film, and how do you think it works?
I think it works astonishingly well. I mean, it does take an actress of Meryl Streep's sort of star quality to be able to do it, I think. But it is an uncanny, for anyone who lived through the Thatcher period in Britain, she has got the, not just the voice, but the breathing, the tilt of the head. She uncannily recalls Mrs. Thatcher.
The men of violence have chosen in recent months to play what may well be their last card.
But she also seems to get the spirit and the strength of the woman, but also what I think the film does so well is to show the human cost, the vulnerability, the cost to the family, of, because she wasn't naturally... She developed the sort of star quality through her determination to get her message across. But it wasn't, she wasn't like that when she was young.
Much more like Churchill and Queen Elizabeth I,
yes,
in the sense of being a reluctant leader of a huge giant empire that was not an intuitive sense for her.
That's right. I mean, there were comparisons with Queen Elizabeth at the time, which she rather enjoyed. She rather enjoyed comparisons with Churchill, too.
So did she have the capacity, and as someone who grew up during the Thatcher period, and I grew up, I've lived through the Thatcher period and remembers it well, John Campbell, did Margaret Thatcher have the power to reassure?
I don't think reassurance was what she was in politics for, no. I think she was trying to remoralize British society, in a way. She was trying to cut out what she thought were the bad elements within British society. Reassurance, that may have been what Reagan was about, but it wasn't what Thatcher was about at all.
So in statements in reaction to terrorist attacks during the time that she was in office, she's more about, we shall get to the bottom of this, rather than we must all hold hands together in grief.
No, her immediate response to terrorist attacks was that they will never defeat us, you know, democracy will stand, we will fight them and we will find them and we will defeat them.
The bomb attack on the Grand Hotel early this morning was first and foremost an inhuman, undiscriminating attempt to massacre innocent, unsuspecting men and women staying in Brighton for our Conservative conference.
Iron Lady, the name. Would she love that?
Oh, she did love it. I mean, it was coined within a few months of her becoming Conservative leader in 1975. She made a very tough sort of anti-Soviet Cold War speech. And it was the Soviet Army newspaper, Red Star, which called her the Iron Lady, meaning it to be an insult. But she immediately saw that this was the gift, because people thought, oh, a woman prime minister, she's going to burst into tears at the first sign of a crisis. You know, this was exactly what she needed to be the image to show that she could be as tough or tougher than any of the men.
Soviets call you an Iron Lady, you wear it like a badge.
Absolutely.
Lessons from Margaret Thatcher there, the former British prime minister. John Campbell, who we were speaking with, is the author of the book Iron Lady. It's the book behind the new Meryl Streep movie of the same name. A one-volume version of his book has just been released in the United States to coincide with the release of the movie. All week we've been talking about the response to Jodi Kantor's book, The Obamas. There's been a lot of conversation about Michelle Obama's role in the White House. She's no Margaret Thatcher, but she does have an image that she's been compelled to defend this week. Here's what you had to say. George Lucas from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, posted this to our website, thetakeaway.org. Jodi Kantor says she never described Mrs. Obama as a, quote, angry black woman, contrary to Obama's assertions, but the insinuation is there. When will this all stop? First it was the sleeveless dress, then she was forcing our children to eat healthy, and now this. Get over it. You may recall Michelle Obama went on CBS News and reacted not so much to the book, which she said she hadn't read, but to the coverage of the book, that it made her look like something she's been constantly portrayed as, she said, an angry black woman. Jamel from Missouri weighed in. I think Michelle Obama has been wonderfully classy and is always a lady. Enough said. Janelle, keeping it simple. We want to hear from you. Give us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. And if you want to catch up on that conversation with the author of The Obamas or anything else on our show this week, head over to our site, thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. Have a great Martin Luther King weekend. Celeste Headlee is out today. And, you know, be careful. It's Friday the 13th. This is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.